You are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and We Saw the Devil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello, everyone. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and today's episode is going to be about the absolute tragedy that unfolded last week in Michigan. The shooting at Oxford High School. What exactly happened? What's going on now? Who is the suspect? And why are his parents being charged in this case? We're going to go over all of that, but before we get into it, let's get our housekeeping out of the way. You can find us at wesawthedevil.com, and from there you can find our social media accounts, which follow us if you don't. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can also find our Patreon, where for as little as $3 a month, you can financially back the show and get some goodies out of it. And speaking of which, speaking directly to our patrons, December postcards have been sent, and as well as our updated round of stickers. So please, if you have not, follow the link that I have posted in our Patreon, as well as in our Patreon-only Facebook group, and make sure that you have subscribed to that, set up your address and whatnot, so that you will receive postcards as well. Want to make sure that you guys receive them. And then to all listeners, if you have any questions, concerns, complaints, or compliments, please feel free. Do not hesitate to reach out. You can email us directly at info@wesawthedevil.com. So let's get into it. This is an episode that I was a little iffy about putting out, honestly, because it's such a hot button topic. Not only the shooting itself, but the conversation that inevitably follows all mass shootings, right? But as of today, December 8th, there have been 223 school shootings in America in just 2021 alone. 223 school shootings in America just in 2021 alone. And don't get me wrong, guys, I love America. There are a lot of amazing places. I've traveled extensively. I've been many places across the globe, actually. I've met incredible people. And we do, despite what people say, have some pretty damn good food here in America, I would say. We have some really gorgeous places. And we're good at a lot. Which is why I wanted to look at U.S. News' country rankings to see what areas we excel in the most. So what I found is, let's see, quality of life. Nope, we're number 20 there. Healthcare. Try again, please. We're actually number 11 in the world in healthcare. Life expectancy. How about life expectancy? You know, do you feel pretty good? Like you have adequate care? Nope. We're 46th in the world in life expectancy. And okay, well, maybe how about not like healthcare based questions, right? Let's just do something simple like happiness. Nope. We're number 11. There as well, with, might I add, one of the concerns being safety. But there has to be good news, right? Like, there has to be something. So what I did was I changed the search criteria to see what America actually is number one in. And here are some things that I found. We are number one with having the most women on antidepressants. We are number one with most student loan debt. We are number one with the highest beef production. We have a lot of cows. Good job, guys. We also are number one in the number of adults who believe angels are real, which, I mean, to each their own, I guess. But then we have a really heavy hitter, like number one in number of incarcerated citizens per capita, beating out China and Russia both. So round of applause for the United States for that one. This one's common knowledge. We're number one in the most military bases. In general, across the world, we are everywhere. In largest military budget, we have the largest in the world. And finally, we are number one in mass shootings. Now, I'm 37, guys. Just turned 37 a couple months ago. And I was 15 when Columbine happened. I was actually homesick that day with a really bad cold, and I watched it actually happen live on television. And it was my first memory of a school shooting, and I just couldn't fathom it. I mean, immediately thereafter, the backlash against goth started happening. Any kid dressing in black, black makeup, black hair, alternative band t-shirt like Marilyn Manson or Tool at the time. You know, all of that was met with additional side eye and scrutiny from basically any adult and most other children, you know, their peer groups. And I just didn't understand it. You know, the full blame went on Marilyn Manson. He made a round dirtbag in his own right, you know, based on his current legal problems and issues. But, you know, the full blame went on to him, more or less. Him and dark music, dark things. People were looking for that scapegoat. They were looking for the reason why two everyday American teenagers would decide to turn and murder their fellow classmates. And people really looked into that and started basically throwing blame everywhere they possibly could. Then it was video games, all of this crap. And as Columbine unfolded, what I found interesting is that Australian media actually dubbed the United States, publicly might I add, a quote, sick gun society. And regardless of your stance on guns, you have to admit that we have a sincere problem in this country. I don't care how much you love guns or how many you have. Like, that's not, I don't care. We have a problem with guns in this country. And in terms of school shootings, the problem goes all the way back to the early 1800s. I was actually shocked to realize that this isn't a new development or just recently appearing phenomenon. We have had school shootings since the mid 1800s. At least those are the earliest, probably not even all of them, but like the earliest on record. University of Alabama criminology professor Dr. Adam Langford has been studying mass shootings in America for years, decades. And here's the interesting part. His research showed two things. One, America is obviously number one in mass or public shootings. And two, which is, this is a direct quote, quote, it wasn't that firearms were a hobby or something that was part of their culture or upbringing. It was actually that once they became interested in killing, then they knew that they needed to use a gun as a tool to reach their goal. And the book, The Violence Project, How to Stop a Mass Shooting Epidemic, covers several common themes pertaining to the shooters themselves. One, school mass shooters tend to be current or former students of the school. Two, they almost always are in crisis of some sort before the attack, as indicated by a noticeable change in behavior from usual. Three, they are often inspired by other school shooters. Four, they tend to leak their plans for violence in advance to their peers. And five, school shooters almost always get their guns from family and friends who either fail to store them safely and securely. That's 90% of the way that they obtained them, actually. Or they get a friend to give them or steal them. In terms of the topic of this episode, the Oxford shooting, several of these items ring true for Ethan Crumley. But what exactly do we know and what exactly happened in Oxford, Michigan on the 30th? Let's start from the beginning now that the puzzle has been pieced together and we have more of a timeline and time frame. On Black Friday, November 26th, James Crumley took his son, 15-year-old Ethan, to Acme Shooting Goods in Oxford, Michigan, to buy a gun. It was a 9mm Sig Sauer TP2022 pistol. Again, not a gun person, so please let me know if that is incorrect. Later that afternoon, Ethan would post pictures on Instagram saying, quote, just got my new beauty today, Sig Sauer 9mm. Ask any questions, I will answer. The next day, on Saturday, his mom, Jennifer Crumley, made a post on her own Instagram that read, Mom and son day, testing out his new Christmas present. Accompanying this caption was a photo of a shooting range at that time. That following Monday, Ethan went to school as normal, and a teacher at Oxford High School was just walking through the classroom and noticed Ethan searching for ammunition on his cell phone. He was actively shopping for bullets on his cell phone. So she immediately reported it to school officials, who in turn immediately called his mom, Jennifer. Now, Jennifer Crumley chose to ignore this initial phone call from her son's school. she let the call go to voicemail. So the school followed up with an email, and neither James nor Jennifer, Ethan's parents, neither one of them actually responded to the school at all. Instead, Jennifer began to text her son Ethan while he was at school that day, and she said, quote, LOL, I'm not mad. You have to learn not to get caught. The next morning, Tuesday, November 30th, Ethan Crumley went to school as normal. A little after 9 a.m., a new teacher, walking through her classroom, this time noticed a drawing on Ethan's desk. It was a page with two separate drawings. The first one was of a handgun pointing at the words, quote, the thoughts won't stop, help me. The second part of the drawing was of a bullet with the words blood everywhere above it, and a drawing of a bleeding person with two bullet wounds below it. The teacher immediately took out her phone, took a picture of it, and then reported it to the principal, who then in turn immediately forced Ethan Crumley's parents to come to Oxford High School to discuss the behaviors observed, like Ethan's behaviors from Monday and Tuesday mornings. Obviously, searching for ammo and then drawing pictures with bleeding people saying, help, the thoughts won't stop. Little bit of a red flag warning sign there. Ethan was immediately sent to the guidance counselor's office while his parents showed up and had a conference with the principal and school officials. And there, for 90 minutes, he worked on homework, had a counseling session, and then he told the counselor that the drawings were for a video game that he was designing. He said that he loves video games, he's a gamer, and that he intended to become a video game designer as a career. So again, Ethan's parents showed up to school, they met with officials, and per Oxford Community School Superintendent Tim Throne, officials, quote, asked specific and probing questions regarding the potential for self-harm or harm to others. The answers from Ethan and his parents led the counselors to believe that there was no threat of violence to himself or to others. At no point in this conversation did school officials discuss any previous social media posts that Ethan Crumbly had made, the current threat against the school by him, the gun they had just purchased, that the family had just purchased, or anything of the sort. In fact, at this time that the family was conferencing with the school officials, that 9mm Sig Sauer handgun was inside of Ethan's backpack. His parents, James and Jennifer Crumbly, were advised that they were required to get Ethan into counseling within 48 hours. They were asked to take Ethan home for the day, but they both refused vehemently and left, supposedly to go back to work. Ethan was then sent back to class. About an hour and a half later, at 12:50 p.m., Ethan took his backpack into the bathroom of his school and emerged just 1 minute later, immediately opening fire on surrounding students. He moved through the hallways at what prosecutors have described as a, quote, methodical pace, shooting at students in hallways and specifically attempted to target classrooms where students had not yet been able to escape from. Oxford High School student Aiden Page told reporters about the scene in his classroom that he was hiding in. He said, quote, we heard two gunshots, and after that, my teacher ran into the room. I locked it, barricaded it, and then we covered the windows and hid. We grabbed calculators, we grabbed scissors, just in case the shooter got in and we had to attack them. He then went on to describe how Ethan Crumley was so close to their room and their door that a bullet pierced one of the desks he and other students had used to block the door. And I'm going to play a clip, and I actually posted this one on our podcast Facebook page last week on the day of the shooting. It came out first on TikTok by a student who was present for the shooting. And for some reason, guys, it hit me so hard and it actually brought me to tears. And I don't know why that is. There's been so much footage coming out from school shootings. I mean, that iconic footage from Columbine with students jumping out of windows and hanging from windowsills, you know, it was just absolutely terrifying when that happened. This clip right here is just, it absolutely devastated me. Because I can't fathom the level of fear that these children felt, what was going through their minds, if they thought they were going to die. It's just something that no child should experience or endure. I mean, another human for that matter, right? Like another civilian. No regular civilian person or child, no one should endure this level of trauma. In this clip, students have barricaded themselves inside of a classroom. You hear a knocking on the door, and someone begins to claim that they're from the sheriff's office and tells them that they can come out. It's all clear. Like, you're all good. Thankfully, I mean, seriously, thank the universe. The kids were skeptical. I don't know, like, I haven't been in school for a very long time. I don't know if they learned this in drills, but the kids were skeptical and declined opening the door. They declined to open the door. Now that it was, in fact, Ethan Crumbly pretending to be a sheriff's department officer, trying to get inside of that classroom so that he could kill him. And because they declined to open the door, Ethan was trying to talk them out of it and use the word bro. He called the student who was talking to him through the door was a guy, and Ethan made the mistake of saying bro. At that moment, all of the students in that classroom knew that that was the shooter. So we're going to listen to that right now.
Yes! Sheriff's office! Safe to come out!
Yeah, he said it's safe to come out.
Now, we're not willing to take that risk right now.
I can't hear you.
We're not taking that risk right now.
Okay, well, come to the door and look at my bag, bro.
No. Yeah, bro.
He said bro.
Red flag.
Go.
Oh.
As the shooting began, the Oakland County Sheriff's Office received hundreds of 911 calls from students, faculty, and concerned parents. Police arrived on the scene at 12:57, just 6 minutes after the shooting began, and less than 5 minutes after the first 911 call came in. I mean, it was almost an immediate response, so kudos to the officers for that. Ethan Crumbly went into a different bathroom. He put the gun down and he peacefully surrendered to police once he saw that they were on the scene. No more incident, no more shooting. He just set down the gun and surrendered. At that point, Ethan had fired more than 30 rounds, killed 3, and injured more than 14 others. At 1:22 p.m., as news of this overall active shooting at Oxford High School began going public, his mom, Jennifer Crumbly, texted her son. All she said was, quote, "Ethan, don't do it." Just 10 minutes later, Ethan's father, James Crumbly, would call 911 to report that a gun was missing from the home and that his son may be the school shooter. The victims' names are Madison Baldwin, 17, Tate Meyer, 16, Hannah St. Juliana, 14, and lastly, Justin Schilling, 17, succumbed to his injuries the following day on Wednesday, December 1st. As of this podcast, which is being recorded Tuesday evening, only one victim remains hospitalized, and that's a 17-year-old girl who was shot in the chest. As of right now, all other students and teachers, faculty members who were hospitalized for their injuries have been released except for her. So what happened after Ethan Crumbly was taken into custody? Well, authorities got a search warrant for the Crumbly home, first and foremost, and there they discovered Ethan's cell phone. Ethan had recorded 2 videos the night before the shooting, and in them, he explicitly talks about shooting and killing students at his high school. And this is all coming from a press conference with Lieutenant Tim Willis of the Oakland County Sheriff's Office. Another piece of evidence is a journal that they actually found in his backpack that detailed his, quote, desire to shoot up the school to include murdering students, Willis also said, at the arraignment this time. James and Jennifer Crumbly spoke to their son the evening of the shooting as he was being held in the local jail. They told Ethan not to talk to police and expressed that they would be hiring an attorney to help him. The next day, on Wednesday, December 1st, as Judge Nancy T. Carniak actually denied Ethan Crumley's bond and agreed to have him transferred from Oakland County's Children Village, the Oakland County's, Oakland County Children's Village to the Oakland County Jail. Big proof there, they are trying him as an adult, and that has been solidified. He will be charged for this as an adult. And then the following day, so now we're on Thursday, the usual happened. Hundreds of shooting and bomb threats poured across America's schools all over the country. And this is what actually happens every time there's a mass shooting, guys. And you don't necessarily hear about it, but every single time that there's a big mass shooting, there are copycat threats all over the country. So in this case, most of Southern Michigan's schools were actually closed as a precautionary measure. Even schools all the way down here in Nashville, Tennessee, we had threats that made local news. And what's so interesting is that the local news, a lot of the articles didn't even link the threats to the Oxford High shooting, but it's all related. It's very cyclical. You can count on it every single time. I dare you, the next time we have a school shooting, and I hate to even say that, but it's just facts in American culture. The next time we have a school shooting, guys, look in your local news or look, in news, and you will see that countless schools either get shut down or warnings or threat levels rise. It happens every single time. As of right now, Ethan Crumley has been charged with terrorism causing death and 4 counts of first degree murder. He also faces 7 counts of assault with intent to murder and 12 counts of possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. In total, there are 24 charges, and again, he will be tried as an adult. Now, that Thursday is also when we received bombshell news that his parents, James and Jennifer Crumbly, may themselves be facing charges. Oakland County Prosecutor Karen McDonald announced last Thursday that she would be basically mulling it over and determining whether his parents would receive charges within 24 hours. Now, this is where I have to say, were Ethan's parents supportive and caring, getting him a lawyer as they had promised their son, as they had planned? Hell no. They bailed once it became clear that their asses may go to jail themselves. As promised, the next day on Friday, last Friday, Karen McDonald announced 4 charges each of involuntary manslaughter against James and Jennifer Crumbly, and the judge authorized their arrest warrants. Here's the problem, though. They were nowhere to be found. Their arraignment was scheduled at 4 p.m. that afternoon, and there was some scuttlebutt over whether, you know, they didn't show up, and their attorney, they were nowhere to be found to be arrested, and their attorney's like, no worries, they said they're going to be at their arraignment. Well, spoiler alert, they were not at their arraignment. And I seriously could not believe it. And I think a lot of people felt that way too. It felt very similar to the early breaking news days of the Gabby Petito case with the bolo on Brian Laundrie. People just seriously could not believe that they disappeared. And that Friday night, they stayed up on Twitter all night just to follow along with the investigation to see if his parents would be found, be caught. However, even though James Crumbly is apparently a pretty smart guy with a 6-figure salary as a technology salesman, he apparently wasn't smart enough to swap out cars while being a fugitive on the run. That's because on Saturday, less than 24 hours after he and Jennifer, his wife, failed to make their own scheduled arraignment, they were caught. They had withdrawn $4,000 from their bank account and driven to Detroit. Now, the investigation is early and ongoing, but it seems like one of their friends decided to help them out and hide them, which people never learn, do they? But, you know, reading the news updates earlier, like I said, ongoing investigation, but I did see where the prosecutors have stated that there may be additional charges coming for additional people involved in this, particularly whoever was hiding them. And it could have worked potentially had they not parked their damn car, which was under the BOLO alert right across the street from the warehouse in which they were hiding. They were taken into custody Saturday way early in the morning at 1:40 a.m. and they were hiding in a basement in this warehouse and totally unarmed. So in terms of upcoming news pieces and items, a probable cause conference is scheduled for Ethan Crumbly on December 13th, and a probable cause hearing is scheduled for both James and Jennifer Crumbly on December 14th, the next day. I mean, it's sweet if you kind of think about it. At least they'll kind of, sort of, maybe be spending Christmas together, like family style, in jail, before they all go to prison. But one of the main questions that I'm seeing people ask, and ask me even, is why Ethan Crumbly was charged with terrorism. And after 9/11, back in 2001, many states began to actually instate their own anti-terror laws. And Michigan was no exception. And their law is from 2002, and it defines a terroristic act as one, quote, intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population or to affect the conduct of a government through intimidation or coercion. And I thought this was a wonderful quote. Oakland County prosecutor Karen McDonald, when kind of, you know, questioned as far as, hey, what's the terrorism charge for, said, quote, "The four students who were killed and seven others who were shot are not the only victims. What about all the children who ran, screaming, hiding under desks? What about all the children at home right now who can't eat and can't sleep and can't imagine a world where they could ever step foot back in school? Those are victims too, and so are the families, and so is this community. The charge of terrorism reflects that." And again, this is a state law. So, for example, in Florida, with the 2018 high school massacre at Parkland, Nicholas Cruz, who I believe that death toll was 17, Nicholas Cruz was not charged with terrorism. This is a state-by-state kind of basis here. But since all of this has transpired, Ethan Crumbly's social media posts have made the rounds, particularly his one profile update on Instagram. The day before the shooting, he actually updated his Instagram profile to read, quote, "Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. See you tomorrow, Oxford." Now, the first part is actual Hindu script. See you tomorrow, you know, obviously isn't, but it's pretty clear. It's a pretty clear direct threat, right? See you tomorrow, Oxford. And then the very next day, the shooting. And what's crazy to me is that the students of Oxford saw that, saw the status update, and some actually ended up staying home from school because of the rumors of that threat and because of his Instagram profile update. Like, it wasn't a secret. At this point, it seems like just another day in America, right? Another school shooting, another day in America. The counter continuously goes back to 0 days since, literally almost every day, it seems. And determining and investigating why this happens so frequently, only in our country for the most part, is far, 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 far above my pay grade. And honestly, it is an incredibly divisive and hot topic. You know, and let's face it, guys, let's be honest here. I'm all about being honest, whether I piss people off or not. The Republicans don't want to do anything. I want my guns. I want my guns and my freedom and the Constitution. And then you have the liberals and progressives on the other side of saying, no, we need to pass some legislation to restrict gun, you know, and state some gun control over here. Like, founding fathers didn't intend for AR-15s and, you know, all of these different, you know, kind of things. Let's do some background checks. And it's just a giant clusterfuck of no one wants to move. And it's just no one wants to meet in the middle or compromise on anything. And that's kind of like our entire political system, it seems. What I can say is that here are some facts. And this is a fact that we cannot dismiss. Research has been done on this time and time and time and time again. And this is also completely corroborated by the FBI. School shootings are directly tied to gun sales. The trend trends that way. Like, school shootings are directly tied to the level of gun sales. The more guns there are, the more access a potential shooter has to a gun. I mean, that is simple fact. And there's such irony in this entire situation. There is an indisputable trend and connection with mass shootings being tied to the rise in gun sales, right? It's a vicious cycle. A mass shooting happens. Those on the left want to pass gun reform. Those on the right scream and buy more guns. Sometimes there are legislative and community policy changes, like on a state or local level, which we'll get to in a moment. Then people get upset and scared, buy all the guns, causing the massive increase in gun sales. And then we see an increase in mass shootings. The data on this has been ongoing since the early 1970s. There is an ungodly amount of research on gun violence in this country because it is a uniquely American trait in so many different ways. Because like I said, even though most of us just remember Columbine, guys, as that first big shooting kind of like of our lifetimes, school shootings are as American as apple pie. It has been a uniquely American trait for the most part since the mid-1800s. In 2019, the U.S. Secret Service and the U.S. Department of Education issued the final report and findings for the Safe School Initiative, Implications for the Prevention of School Attacks in the United States. And this report went over 41 incidents of, quote, targeted school violence that took place in American schools from 2008 to 2017. This report took over two years to complete. It literally looked at the most violent attacks and a wide swath of them and analyzed them closely. And here's what it found. Here's some interesting points that I pulled. 76 of the perpetrators were white. There were three quarters of the shooters. More than 75% of school shooters are white. So I see a lot of things like on Twitter or whenever there's a school shooting. Like, I think like the most classic meme at this point is someone literally just posts a picture of Betty White whenever there's a school shooting and then a picture of Betty White, you know, Betty White. There's actually some validity to that. 75% of them. Two-thirds of them actually come from two-parent families. That's two-thirds. That's a very big chunk come from two-parent families. Same with Columbine. A lot of people want to think of that dysfunctional, sad household, divorced parents, single mother, or like some sort of dynamic like that. And it's just simply not the case. More than two-thirds of them come from two-parent families. 78% of school shooters had a history of suicide attempts or suicidal ideations prior to the attack. Only 34% of the shooters had ever had a mental health evaluation. So to put that in perspective, 78% of the school shooters had a history of suicide attempts or suicidal ideations prior to the shooting, but only 34 of them have ever had a mental health evaluation. Even less than that, only 17% of them had ever been prescribed any sort of medication for mental health issues. 87%, and perhaps the most unsurprising statistic ever, 87% of school shooting perpetrators left behind evidence that they were victims of severe bullying. And what's interesting is they actually analyzed the schools and the school policies where these attacks took place. And almost every single school where the shootings took place had some sort of security measure in place, like lockdown procedures, security cameras, metal detectors, something like that. But only 17% of the schools had a system in place where a student could notify officials if they observed that one of their peers was in crisis. Only 17% had any system in place where if a student saw someone, say, making a drawing about murdering people or making Instagram posts about how they were threatening to shoot up the school tomorrow, like only 17% of schools had a system in place where they could be like, hey, red flags here, something's going on here, I think he's in crisis, something's going on. 17%, that's it. Some of the behaviors the U.S. Secret Service and Department of Education have said that staff should be aware of, as well as other students, increased anger, interest in weapons and violence, depression and isolation, self-harm or sudden change in behavior. And at the core of it, like close to 80% of school shooters shared their intentions with someone else, either in person, online to another person, or even online generically in some sort of manifesto, which again, he updated his Instagram status to indicate that. But what can be done with all of this? Like this information, they spent years on building this report. They have all of these data points. This is just one of hundreds of research and cases that have been done on gun violence and mass shootings in schools in this country. What can be done? That is almost a moot question in the United States, because at this juncture, it is obvious that nothing will be done. We are number one in not doing anything. Research has shown that a huge first step in this would be having the media not give publicity to the shooter, to the attacker. Do you guys remember the Boston bomber back? I was living in Maine when that happened. It was crazy. The Boston bomber who bombed the Boston Marathon, and how he showed up on the cover of Rolling Stone looking like Jim freaking Morrison. I mean, the Columbine shooters themselves still have hundreds of thousands of fans all over the internet. At this juncture, it's mostly like isolated or lonely teenage girls, incels, people who are quite troubled. But not immediately slapping the shooter's face in biography would be a great start. Unfortunately, media is all about being the first to get the money for clicks and views, so I don't foresee that changing at any point in the future. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys go to heavy.com, but it's a new site, and I can count on them 100%. If we have a school or mass shooting in this country, within 30 minutes of that shooting happening, heavy.com is going to have a full lifetime biography on that shooter, with quotes from people who went to like preschool with him. I swear to God, like it's just that soon of them trying to get background information to get to satisfy that public's like thirst for information. So what else could possibly help? Change in healthcare laws, more mental health programs. Well, as the proud holders of, you know, number 11, Gomerica, on the World Healthcare list, with two political parties constantly in a stalemate, I find it kind of unlikely that that's going to happen either. So let's talk to experts, right? Like, what did they say? What do experts believe can be done here? Well, one of the big things is actually red flag laws. And a red flag law is a gun control law that permits police or family members to petition a state court to order the temporary removal of firearms from a person who may present a danger to others or themselves. After the 2018 shooting at Parkland at the high school that killed 17 students, red flag laws were passed in the state. Since then, since 2018, we're talking just a couple years, guys, it has been used more than 4,000 times. It's taken away more than 1,200 guns from people. And these include cases like a 23-year-old guy who posted on Facebook, "I don't know why I don't go on a killing spree," accompanied with a picture of his gun. It included a West Palm Beach husband and wife who shot up their home while high on cocaine with a baby present as well. And it also included a Gulf Coast man, 31 years old, who pointed a semi-automatic rifle at a motorcyclist. Now, to get an order in Florida, police agencies must first file a request with a civil court citing serious mental illness or threats a person has made. If the judge agrees, takes their side, that person must surrender their firearms to police. Within 2 weeks, a hearing is then held during which the judge decides whether to take the person's weapons away for a full year. Police agencies can also apply for an extension if there is evidence a person remains a threat for a year, after a year. If not, and that person has received mental health treatment or, returns to normal, regulates out, the guns are returned to them. Currently, 16 other states plus the District of Columbia have red flag laws, 11 of which were actually enacted after that shooting in Stoneman, after that shooting at Stoneman Douglas in Parkland, Florida. That Parkland, Florida, you know, Newtown, Connecticut didn't do it. Parkland, Florida seemed to be the mass shooting that really, 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 really brought out gun control advocates. But why aren't red flag laws more widespread? It's proven to save lives. Especially in Florida, that was a bipartisan effort. Democrats and Republicans both came together and said, this is common sense. If someone is out there waving a gun and making threats, we should have a legal process on the books to, you know, temporarily, potentially take their guns away from them, take away a weapon from them. So why isn't that more widespread? Why is it only in like 16 states plus Washington, D.C.? Because gun control has become such a hot button trigger phrase and a partisan issue, no one will allow it. Democrats actually keep putting it on the books and Republicans keep completely blocking it. And I don't know, guys, it's I'm not here to talk about politics necessarily or ruffle any feathers. It's just facts. You know, why isn't it I don't know. It's beyond me, and it sincerely breaks my heart. I truly do not understand how after Newtown, after Virginia Tech, after Parkland, after Austin, I can sit here just for the rest of this episode and recite the names of cities where school shootings have taken place just during my lifetime, and it would be over an hour episode if I just sat here reciting names where school shootings have taken place just in the last 30 years. We have done virtually nothing but sit back and wring our hands. An estimated 27,000 students on K through 12 campuses across 22 states were exposed to gun violence in 2021 alone. 27,000 K through 12 campuses across 22 states, guys. That is tremendous. And this is just school shootings K through 12. This isn't even talking about college shootings, workplace shootings, random mass shootings, any of that. That's just children. Typically, you know, 18 through what? Kindergarten is like what, 5 or 6? Like age 5 through 18. 27,000 students. And here's what I'll close with. I never in a million years thought that I would actually be able to speak to this. I have a friend whose young daughter actually attends Oxford High School in Michigan. And she was present the day of the shooting. My friend herself is a teacher at a nearby school, not at Oxford. And I've never actually known anyone personally whose family was either directly impacted by a shooting or even sister, brother, you know, extended family. Luckily, her daughter is okay. But she got the dreaded text message that every mother fears, which is, "Mom, there's a shooter." My friend has been posting on Facebook updates about how her daughter is doing. And let me tell you guys, she's actually not okay. Like, she made it out. I don't think she actually witnessed anything other than the chaos, but she's actually not okay. The students have been out of school trying to process this. Her daughter hasn't been sleeping. She hasn't been eating. She was actually friends with Justin Schilling and collapsed when she heard the news that he actually succumbed to his injuries. You know, we're now on December 8th. She finally is doing better little by little and day by day. And by doing better, I mean going to sleep at 3 a.m. and sleeping for 2 to 3 hours or eating a few bites of food here and there. Witnessing this level of trauma and the fact that this is some kind of like fucked up new normal for the American teenager should make every single one of us deathly ashamed, like deathly ashamed. We have a lot of tools at our disposal that we can use as far as petitioning. I mean, voting, even voting. If you believe that gun control is an issue, you know, that you want to help affect change for and bring into fruition, vote. You know, only so much will be accomplished just by waving a poster board with a slogan on it or signing a petition. You know, so much is decided by judges and representatives and things like that. And contact your local legislator. You know, this is a complex issue and it's going to be a complex solution. Mental health, red flag laws, gun control, sensible background checks. And honestly, I think that James and Jennifer Crumbly's charges for involuntary 4 counts of a voluntary manslaughter sets an amazing precedent. And I am so excited that they were also charged because not only were they privy to his ideas of, like, you know, hating school, he got nailed for the buying the ammunition and his mom was like, ha ha ha, don't get caught. They ran from the charges themselves and they didn't keep a gun safe. Gun safety laws are like another big one that the U.S. Secret Service and Department of Education determined that would help tremendously. Just locking up your guns. Like, there are so many common sense reforms and common sense laws and things that can be done to help prevent this. But yeah, that's it. That's what I'm closing with, guys. It's just so sad. And I have no doubt in my mind that in the next 7 days, I'm going to turn on the news or get a notification on my phone of school shooting. And at this point, I'm not even surprised. I'm not even shocked. I just pull my little notification down and say, oh, damn, Missouri this time, or Chicago, or God, Illinois. And I mean, that's literally it at this point. This is where we are in 2021. And it's just so incredibly sad. But that's all I have for today, guys. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. Again, you can go to our website, wesawthedevil.com. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all social media. You can find our Patreon, financially back the show if you've been enjoying it. And yeah, don't hesitate to don't be a stranger. Shoot us an email, info@wesawthedevil, and reach out. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, and you can join our Facebook group there. Or if you become a Patreon, you can join our Patreon only Facebook group. See you later this week, guys. Until next crime.